The Fort Riley Military Base in the glorious Flint Hills of Kansas is one of the most historic facilities in the U.S. Army. Welcome to the Fort Riley Museum's Historical Podcast, sponsored by the Friends of the Fort Riley Museums, a nonprofit organization that supports the mission of the museum. Your host is Hall of Fame broadcaster Dave Lewis of Ad Astracast Productions. In this podcast, Dave is joined by the director of the museums, Dr. Bob Smith.
We are tickled that you could join us for the very first inaugural episode of the Friends of Fort Riley Museums. And today, I have three guests that are visiting here in the Ad Astracast studios. We have Dr. Bob Smith, who is Director of Museums for Fort Riley. Dr. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's good to be here.
You've been around these parts for a while.
Quite a while. Been director 11 and a half years, going on 12 this September.
And you brought two friends along. We have Jack Lindquist, who is a member of the board.
That's correct.
You're a buff.
You know, when a guy gets an A in history in high school, it should be applied to something.
How long did it take you before you figured out that you needed to apply that A in the real world?
When I started working with leadership development programs, the military history is critical to what we do around the world. And I learned that over and over again, visiting countries all over this earth.
I might just get a little background. You've been involved with a couple of terrific leadership programs that are basically centered in and around the Manhattan area.
Yeah, the Kansas Agriculture and Rural Leadership Program is based at Kansas State University, but it's a private nonprofit entity. But we spent the 23 years that I was the director, went to 27 countries as part of the leadership training program. Every one of those, we visited the U.S. embassies. And when we visit those, the first thing we learn is that we've got boots on the ground that keep peace so that we can make those trade visits. And that's exactly the way it worked. And I've been to 13 more countries since then. So pay a great tribute to the United States military, our service personnel, and those folks that make it peaceful for us to go all around the world and have trade and cultural relationships.
Our other guest today is one who has been involved in the military world for at least as long as you have been married, Christine Benny. You're a member of the board as well.
I am. I am on the board as well. I'm the secretary and help do publicity with Jack. That is one of my many roles that I have, along with being the military relations coordinator with Greater Manhattan Community Foundation. And we'll talk about that a little bit later.
We brought Dr. Smith in for a lot of reasons. There's a lot of fantastic things that are in the works with the Fort Riley Museums. And Dr. Bob, can I just call you Dr. Bob? Is that?
Absolutely.
I think everybody always has done that.
Everybody's done that.
But let's talk a bit about the museums at Fort Riley. And you know, there is a lot of history at the home of the Big Red One.
Oh, there's an incredible amount of history. I mean, the fort was established in 1853, named Fort Riley just a few months later. And the museums have been an integral part of telling the story of the history of Fort Riley and the Big Red One. And our two museums are being remodeled now. We've been closed nearly 3.5 years.
Has it been that long? Really?
It has been that long. The Army decided some years ago that the museums throughout the United States, actually the 63 museums in the United States and outside the continental United States, needed some refurbishment. And so we were chosen as one of the first museums to be refurbished. We had not been remodeled since the mid-1980s, and decided that what the public requires today are the, you know, a little more hands-on type exhibits, immersive experiences, and things like that. So we began the process. We worked with two very, very fine design companies, Healy Kohler out of Washington, D.C., and they're known for, right now, if you're in the museum, tech. They did just finished the Museum of the American Revolution in Philadelphia. So really high credentials there. The other firm out of New York City is Whirlwind Creative, and they're known for working on the museum that is under the Statue of Liberty. And so we have two very fine designers that came and worked for about 2.5 years with us in working out and making it a fully functional, modern 21st century museum. That being said, those buildings at Fort Riley were built, my cavalry museum was built in 1855 and served initially as the first hospital, then the garrison headquarters. And then after that, it in the late or mid 1970s, It became a museum. And I would guess that the exhibits were looking a little old and stale. And so the Army decided to upgrade. The 1st Infantry Division Museum building was built in 1903. And so that needed some TLC also. So a company by the name of Jade Blinderman out of Chicago, Illinois, came in and worked on the museums for about a little less than 2 years. And the buildings are just fine old buildings. We wanted to restore the craftsmanship that exists in there from the when those buildings were built in the early 20th century. And so we wanted to get those and bring those back. And then the museum, the technology for museums has changed markedly over the years. And what we found is that we could bring the aesthetic beauty of the buildings back by opening some of the windows, exhibiting some of the woodwork that had been covered for years, the fine craftsmanship. And they did a fine job. They put an incredible amount of steel in our building because one of the plans that we had was to put a Jeep, a World War II Jeep, a Gatling gun, a couple of machine guns, and a 1941 Harley-Davidson motorcycle on the second floor of a building that was built in 1855. And so they made that happen for us. And so they spent the 2 years working on that. And now we're into the portion, which is the exhibit fabrication. And exhibit fabrication has really changed in the last few years, too. Most of the exhibits for the museum have been built off-site, and they will be brought in and then modularized and put in place in the museum. And we anticipate that taking just a couple of months. And we think that sometime this fall, we're going to be back open.
After 3.5 years, you think you're going to be able to have people come back in and take a real look at a Gatling gun?
Dave, I sincerely hope so. But it looks like everything is on track now, and we're really pleased. We've had a lot of folks call us and things. We have been missed. Let me put it that way. When we closed down in 2018, we had a visitation of over 60,000 people a year in there. And so we were one of the top attractions in the state of Kansas. We were actually voted one of the top attractions just a few years before we closed. And so we want to get back and get the public back in to see the marvelous things. I will say the marvelous things that both Jade Blinderman, Healy Kohler, Whirlwind Creative, and my staff have done to put this together.
That's what a couple of hundred people coming through the museum a day.
That is. We've had some days in which we've had 200-300 people come through. And so we have been missed.
Do you have some goals of higher attendance?
Oh, absolutely. Once we get open, I would really like to hit that 100,000 mark. And I think that's possible.
Dr. Bob, what are some of the most precious or the historic relics that I think most people would find incredibly fascinating that you've had in, you've curated and they're in storage protected? What are some of those things?
For the 1st Infantry Division, we have had in storage for a couple of years. We actually brought them back to its original home at Fort Riley. We found them down at Fort Bliss in an Army museum there. But the Terry Allen collection, and Terry Allen was very important during the Second World War with the 1st Infantry Division. Took the division to North Africa and Sicily. And so we have his flag. We have his pistol belt, his pistol. We have his helmet. But the artifact that I'm most pleased that we have is his dog tag. And his dog tag shows both the Fort Riley connection and a 1st Infantry Division connection. Terry Allen commanded the 9th Cavalry at the beginning of the Second World War. And he was then promoted to Major General and received command of the 1st Infantry Division. But his dog tag has his name on it and his address. And his address is Quarters 5, Fort Riley, Kansas. And so just that little dog tag is just shows that there's a connection between the 1st Infantry Division, which its home is there now, and Fort Riley, which has been a post since 1855. I must add, though, one of the items that I'm most proud of, and I have yet to lay eyes on it, but a few years ago, There was a move to bring Comanche, only survivor of Custer's command at the Little Bighorn. It was a horse that Miles Keogh rode. Well, we worked with the people in Lawrence at the Dyke Museum, and the Dyke Museum, we found that this national treasure is just much too fragile to move and even bring in for a loan. So the Dyke people were very kind to us, allowed us to put the Tyvek suits on. We went in, we measured Comanche. We got photographs of his color of his hair. We sent original photographs from the time period when he was still alive and residing at Fort Riley. He actually died at Fort Riley in 1890. And so when folks come into the U.S. Cavalry Museum, the first thing they're going to see is a clone of Comanche. And he's going to have real horse hair on him. And so when they come in, they will actually see that connection. So we couldn't really bring Comanche given his state of fragility. But now we have a Comanche that you can come in and see. So we're really pleased with that.
I would imagine that that was something that the folks in Lawrence weren't really too excited about giving up. This seems to be like a nice alternative.
Well, they were very kind and very nice. The other thing about Comanche is that the taxidermy at the time period was not what it is today, and he is covered in arsenic. And so there would have to be special provisions made in for even to show him. So we thought that this would be a really nice alternative.
There's so much history from Fort Riley. You go back to its very beginning. And of course, you know, so much of that was reaching out to the West. And that's the founding of Fort Riley. It was to help build a gateway to the West, wasn't it?
That's correct. That's correct. I spoke to a group this morning, and we were out on the cavalry parade field. And I basically said, you know, in 1853, when the post was established, we have the military road that led from Fort Leavenworth to Fort Riley. And I said, once you're past the cavalry parade field, that's the wild frontier. That's the Wild West. And so we were the edge of the frontier in 1853. The remarkable thing about Fort Riley is that throughout its history, that it has always been able to evolve, and it's evolved over time to be whatever the nation and the army needed. And by that, I mean, it was first a frontier post to protect the settlers and also keep peace between the Native Americans and the settlers. And then after the West had moved on, the frontier had moved on, in the 1880s, it became the cavalry training post and trained soldiers, both officers and enlisted, in the cavalry branch all the way up to 1947. But then in World War I, Camp Funston is built, and it trains 50,000 troops for the Western Front. And it becomes the major training cantonment during World War I. Of all the camps throughout the United States, Fort Riley was the largest, with Camp Funston.
About that time, that would have made it about the largest city in Kansas, too.
Just about. There's so much interesting history. Now you got me on a roll here.
Gotta pull those reins back a little bit on you, Bob.
In 1917-18, the merchants of Junction City and Manhattan, Kansas, banded together, and they created what was called the Army City, right outside of Camp Funston. And it was intended to keep the soldiers there on the post and not let them go out to Manhattan. And there were two movie theaters. There was a hotel for the families to be there. And my favorite is it had, at that time, in 1918, the world's largest barbershop. It had 64 chairs.
Oh, my.
Fort Riley has always evolved, and now it's the home of the Big Red One, and it's always met that mission, though, that the Army and the nation has asked it to do, and it's always responded. And so that's one of the great things I think about Fort Riley.
And a lot of people don't realize that the engagement of Fort Riley, and especially in the formation of the state of Kansas, the territorial capital was there on the grounds or right adjacent to the grounds, but also the Civil War. But the fort didn't really have that much engagement in the Civil War.
It didn't, although it did have some. We brought back the American Army, or the United States Army, during the Civil War, brought back around 100 prisoners from the Battle of Glorieta Pass. And so we became a sort of a POW camp during the Civil War. But also a couple of very famous folks that served at Fort Riley made their names in the Civil War. Nathaniel Lyon, the first general officer that was killed at the Battle of Wilson's Creek, the first general officer killed during the Civil War. James Ewell Brown Stewart, the cavalry commander, the Confederate cavalry commander. He made his mark at Fort Riley because he decided when he came as a young lieutenant to court the garrison commander's daughter. That was really, you know, a high bar there. Eventually married her. We think that they were married on post. And then he went back when the war began. He was a Virginian. To serve in his state's Confederate Army. And so we have those folks. And we have George Patton that served three times, first as a student, then as an instructor, and then as deputy commander of the cavalry school. And we have, like I mentioned earlier, Terrible Terry Allen, you know, first ID commanding general in the Second World War. George Armstrong Custer served at the fort from 66 to 67. Hap Arnold, who commanded the 8th Air Force in World War II and then became the first commander of our United States Air Force. He served in the 1920s at Fort Riley. Basically, Dave, you trip over history when you go out to Fort Riley.
We're going to take our first break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about more of some of those historical footnotes and get a little bit more perspective on the opening of the Fort Riley Museums. It is scheduled, at least for right now, for some time, fall of 2022. I'm joined by Jack Lindquist and Christine Benny, who are members of the Friends of Fort Riley Museums, and Dr. Bob Smith and I will be back.
The mission of the Friends of Fort Riley Museums is to assist the Fort Riley Museum Division to collect, preserve, exhibit, and interpret those materials that are integral parts of the history and traditions of the U.S. Cavalry, the 1st Infantry Division, and units assigned to Fort Riley, and of course the Custer House. We assist the Fort Riley Museums in historical education, like sponsoring this podcast, and with sponsorships of training, research, and other historical efforts. The museums of Fort Riley have some things that government funds cannot or simply do not cover. For instance, the current renovation of the museums, one of the goals of the Friends is to have the clock in the tower restored and working. Other funds will help in the purchasing of reference materials for the museum's reference library, purchase reproduction uniforms for color guards for local and military events, purchase of display cases, and numerous miscellaneous items. With your help, we can keep the Fort Riley Museums at the forefront of military museums and help preserve the history of Fort Riley and the local area.
Anyone can join and support the Friends of the Fort Riley Museums. Annual membership fees are $20 per year. A lifetime membership is $200. Also, you may use the link in the show notes to donate through the Armed Forces Community Foundation, which is a partner of the Greater Manhattan Community Foundation. We also invite you to donate during the Foundation's Match Day on Veterans Day, November 11th.
Dr. Bob Smith, who is the Director of Museums for the Fort Riley Museums, is our guest today. And here on the podcast, The Mission of the Friends of the Fort Riley Museum, we're going to be talking about a lot of different things here within our podcast. And we've already discussed, Dr. Bob, some of the historical aspects about Fort Riley. And there's so many that you can't contain them in just one facility.
No, we have two facilities. They are co-located. So it's within just a few feet of each other, the U.S. Cavalry Museum, and it tells the story of the United States Cavalry branch from its origins during the American Revolution all the way up to the present day. Right next door is the 1st Infantry Division Museum, and that tells the story of the 1st Infantry Division from 1917 and its inception to the present day. And so it is a unique division in the United States Army and it is the longest continuously serving division in the United States Army. It has never gone away. Many of the divisions that were famous in the First and Second World War, they've gone away or they have been demobilized or deactivated. But the 1st Infantry Division has remained together from 1917 all the way up to its present day.
Dr. Bob, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know that I've been to the Cavalry Museum since I was like in fourth grade. So many of us that have grown up in Kansas are familiar with some of that, but we probably just got a little sliver.
There's so much history, but the museums are going to be totally new. So if you've been there, and Dave, if you remember back in your grade school days when you went through, you will not recognize it because of some of the changes we've made. In the 1st Infantry Division Museum, one of the most popular items that we decided to retain but upgrade is a World War I walkthrough trench. And so folks will experience or probably have to duck here with all the electronic things that are going to be happening. My trench has to have, you know, to be historically accurate. Two of the requirements I had for the designers and the fabricators is if you're going to have a trench, you've got to have some moisture. You've got to have something that simulates water because there's a lot of water. And the other thing is you've got to have lots and lots of rats. Because there were rats in the trenches.
And a fog machine for the gas.
There you go.
I don't know. You may have lost me at the rats.
One of the really interesting technological things that we're doing with the 1st Infantry Division Museum is there's a room on the second floor. There's a small gallery on the second floor, and it is called Remembrance. And it is soldiers' crosses. Are you familiar with the soldier cross?
Yes.
We begin with World War I and go all the way up. World War I, Second World War, the Vietnam conflict, Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, and then we have the current operations. So we kind of, and you can go in there. There's going to be a computer kiosk at each one, and folks can type in notes about their relatives or someone they knew that was in the Army during that particular period. If it was my grandfather was in the Second World War and he served, and we don't, you know, even though maybe they didn't serve in the 1st Infantry Division during the Second World War, they can put their remembrance in there, and that will be then archived into the museum archives. And so it's one of those things that I really think is kind of brings home to everybody, and it makes relevance to those even civilians that come into the museum.
My grandfather was in World War I. I really don't know much about his time there because he just didn't talk about it.
Most veterans don't talk about their time. That's really interesting. You know, my father was a World War II veteran, and only towards the end of his life it actually opened up. He saw a lot of action in the United States Navy and basically did not want to talk about it until, you know, his final years. And so, you know, it's things like that that when folks come to the museum, they can have that personal touch that we wanted to have there, that, you know, you may know someone in the military. And so they are part of your family history and they're part of our history. And so we'd like you to share it with us.
Over the last few years, we've had a reintroduction into what a concept of a pandemic is.
Oh, yes.
And there's
quite
a pandemic at Fort Riley. That basically triggered a flu issue globally back in 1918.
I knew you were going to bring that up. We do make mention of it. Interestingly enough, there's new scholarship out about the 1918 pandemic, and we aren't the only one. We're one of three possible ground zeros for the outbreak. I mean, it's history,
it is.
Warts and all. But we do touch on it because a number of soldiers that deployed from Fort Riley succumbed to the flu. We do tell the story, warts and all.
So what's on the table for the Fort Riley Museums once you open this fall?
Well, there are some very large dioramas, sort of immersive experiences. One of them is in the Cavalry Museum, which we have a little more room for, is we have a World War II Jeep sitting on top of a pile of rubble with two GIs in the Jeep. Around that, we have artifacts that were turned over to the Army by famous folks, but also the Joe, you know, ordinary infantry soldier. We have an interactive Battle of the Little Bighorn map using the new scholarship and the archaeological work that was done in the 70s and 80s. We have a better picture of what actually happened in June of 1876, and you can actually hit and you'll see which way Custer went, which way Crazy Horse went, where Sitting Bull was. One of my favorites, it's the smallest gallery in the Cavalry Museum, but it's my favorite, and it is a small room where you walk through, and it has a theater marquee outside, and it is cavalry movies, Hollywood, fact versus fiction. And we actually put, you know, okay, here's John Wayne. I guess a lot of the kids, though, today don't know who John Wayne is.
Who's John Wayne?
Who's John Wayne? Here's what John Wayne wore in the specific movie. But this is the actuality. This is what they actually look like. And so we want to give a little nod to, you know, conceptions. You know, Fort Riley. Fort Riley was a cavalry post centered around a cavalry parade field. There were no walls like Fort Apache or anything like in the movies. No, that was standard operation for the cavalry, the way they put posts together out here in the West. And so we try to blend the fact and kind of dispel the fiction. And we might, you know, break a few myths there. One of the other items that was suggested, and I can't take credit for it, but it was really coming along well, is in the Cavalry Museum, and I'm sticking with Cavalry Museum because it is the largest building, but we actually had room to put a children's museum in. And so that kids can go in there and they can crawl into a covered wagon, and we have little uniforms and things for them to try on, and they can be in there. And so it was, I can't take credit for that suggestion, but it was decided that this would be a nice, you know, addition to a museum where, you know, you can actually, the kids can go in and play and you can go through the museum. We also will have something that we have not had for many, many years in a museum. We have what's called a regimental room. And this room is open for the military to do their, if there's inclement weather out on the cab parade field, they can do their change of commands or change of responsibilities in there. And in that room, and this is kind of mixing apples and oranges together, we have a piece of 1st Infantry Division history in that regimental room in the Cavalry Museum. And that is the Lafayette desk. And we actually found that desk a few years ago that had been loaned out to another museum, and we had asked for it back, and they graciously gave it back. It was a desk that was given by the French government in 1918 to the commander of the 1st Infantry Division in recognition for the United States service to France. And it's a very ornate desk, but we believe that this desk, that the commanders of the division from 1917 all the way up to the mid-1990s used that desk in their office. And so if we talk about history, you know, you can think about, well, were some of the D-Day operations planned on this desk and things? And so it's really just a beautiful piece, and it tells the history of the division and its service.
Do you feel that many Kansans don't really grasp all the historical aspects that Fort Riley has been a part of over the last 170 some years?
I would believe so. And the question that always comes, you know, we've had great visitation, but even with the young soldiers coming on post, they'll say, oh, you have a museum here? And so I don't think we really aren't cognizant of the history that's at Fort Riley and the area. We actually pay some tribute to that in one of the galleries we've added. It's in the Cav Museum. Who was here before Fort Riley? So we call it the land, the people, and the horse. And it is the Native Americans that were here, the Kansa, the Osage, and the Pawnee. And so we have an entire gallery devoted to what was here before Fort Riley. And so we pay tribute to those folks.
Will there be some rotational exhibits that may be coming into play? I mean, do you have a schedule down the road where there may be something new that comes on loan or that's available that would be really cool to check out?
We have temporary galleries in both museums, and we will be adding items. And things just come our way. And we think, oh, that would be a great idea. A few years ago, right before we closed the museum, a gentleman gave us his toy soldier collection. And we went through our collection and found we have 1st Infantry Division G.I. Joes from the 1960s.
Really?
And we have, oh, this will really floor you, Dave, is we have a G.I. Jane, a Barbie doll, 1st Infantry Division.
Christine's represented.
But when things come that way, we think, oh, this would be great, you know, for a temporary exhibit. And so we're working on some ideas. We have thousands of postcards from the beginning of the 20th century all the way up to the 1940s. And we'd like to do a postcard exhibit of photographs and the different postcards that were sold on military posts, you know, to write home to the folks. Yeah, my staff shakes their head every time I come up with one of these good ideas.
What about Vietnam and then also the Gulf War?
We do both consider in the 1st Infantry Division Museum, Vietnam. We have a Medal of Honors recipient, Colonel Rogers, who served at Firebase Rita in 1969. We have his uniform, and in conjunction with that, we're going to have a small diorama, a model of Firebase Rita, and where he received that. And if I understand everything, it's going to have all the bells and whistles. It was fought at night, so they're going to have lighting to show the star shells and things that occurred. And so Vietnam is well represented. The Gulf War is also represented, and even OIF and OEF. We've got one diorama where we have everyone's heard of the IEDs in Iraq during Operation Iraqi Freedom. Well, we have a bomb suit, and the mannequin is actually defusing a bomb that's buried in the ground. And so we try to keep up with all of the operations and kind of pay tribute to each of those with each gallery. We also have one other gallery, and it was another small gallery, but in 1991, the 1st Infantry Division's 1st Engineers went up to Paiute National Forest and fought forest fires, and we've got all their firefighting gear. And so it's a question of Fort Riley, the division is first and foremost a warfighter, but there are also trainers, educators, and even firefighters.
Do you find that, you know, considering all of these different conflicts and interests that Fort Riley and its soldiers and their families have been involved in, it would seem to me at least one of the biggest challenges may be to where do you draw the line on what goes in and what may be held back for future display?
We have a lot of discussions, and we have guidelines from our headquarters, too, on that. We submit ideas. We are first and foremost educators. Well, we are educators to educate the public, educate soldiers. We're also those folks that are to protect the material culture of the Army, the items, what Jack had mentioned about items from the American Revolution. And so that's, but we want to be very tasteful. We take suggestions, and we don't create exhibits just very lightly. We actually put some thought into them, and then we talk to other historians, and we talk to our headquarters and say, this is what we want to do. This is how we want to do it, and any suggestions. And to date, we have never had any problem with what stories we wanted to tell.
Do you have an exhibit that you're most proud of for the and most excited for people to see?
I'm most excited for them to come in and see the opening galleries, because those were in both the Cavalry Museum and in the 1st Infantry Division Museum. Both of those exhibits, first thing they see is Comanche, and they see a series of mannequins in correct reproductions of uniforms from the Revolution, the Civil War, the 1930s. When folks come into the 1st Infantry Division Museum, they're going to see a timeline of the history of the division and the Medal of Honor recipients, the 36 or 37 Medal of Honor recipients from World War I all the way up to the current. And then we throw them right into, you know, the action. Both museums follow a chronology. We start with the Revolution and the Cab Museum. We start in 1917 with the 1st Infantry Division Museum, and we follow that. We found that that's probably the best way in order to tell our story, and we have a particular story to tell in both museums.
Christine, I understand there may be a gift shop also.
There is a gift shop. As friends of the Fort Riley Museum, which we do a lot of support, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But yes, there is a gift shop, and it's being stocked. Things are being put in right now. Right now, it is housed at Twitch's, which is in Junction City. But we will be having our own gift shop, and Twitch's will be running that gift shop for us. And we have a lot of great things. Now, I have to say, I don't know what exactly is going in there yet.
They're stocking now, so expect some really cool things from 1st Division.
Well, I need a really cool thing up on my wall of collectibles here in my studios.
Right beside me is a wonderful World War II helmet.
I like that one.
With the big red one emblazoned on the front. If you want something that you want to commemorate your visit, they'll be in that gift shop.
Bob, it's up to you to determine what goes up on my wall of collection.
I accept.
Well, how exciting for you. I'm looking forward to sharing the message here within our podcast and more opportunities and so many great stories to tell. And, you know, you're a wealth of knowledge, and we certainly appreciate you coming in and giving us a peek at what to expect with the Fort Riley Museums.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Dave. Happy to do it.
Thanks for traveling with us to historic Fort Riley. As we relive the great stories and gain some perspective of the exhibits you'll see at the museum beginning this fall, following a 3.5-year renovation project. Follow and subscribe to the Fort Riley Museum's Historical Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.